Thanks for downloading Think from KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth. You can learn more and support this program at kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Informal Courses for Adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Your mother probably taught you not to judge people by their looks. If you want to know who a person is, what he values, and how he thinks, basing your assessment solely on appearance can be misleading. The way a person communicates is another matter altogether. It is nearly impossible not to draw conclusions about people's intelligence, educational attainment, and worldliness based on how well they speak and write. But while most of us learn to speak before we're two and to write by the time we're six, perfecting those skills can be a lifelong challenge. That's why we are very lucky to know experts like Brian Garner. He is a lexicographer who has spent years putting his own formidable knowledge into books like Garner's Modern American Usage, a personal favorite, and the Oxford Dictionary of American Usage and Style. He is also the writer of Black's Law Dictionary and president and founder of the legal writing education company LawPros.org. We are delighted to have him with us for 2 hours today as part of our first fundraising campaign of 2007. Brian, welcome to Think.
Great to be back.
We'll keep the phone lines open throughout the show at 800-933-5372 so people can get their burning grammatical questions answered. We also, though, would ask that before you make that call, you check your KERA member card and see if it's time for you to renew. Call first to our amazing volunteers at 1-800-456-5372. Get your membership squared away. If you don't have copies of Brian's many books, we have three of them today at the $120 membership level: Garner's Modern American Usage, the Oxford Dictionary of American Usage and Style, and Black's Law Dictionary. If you want the Law Dictionary, I think we just have a couple of copies of that, and it is huge, so you ought to really call right away. We're hoping to get 35 new or renewing members, people who are listeners, to convert themselves to members this hour. The number again is 1-800-456-5372, or of course you can email think@kera.org to talk to us, and you can go online to kera.org, go to the membership page, and become a member. All right. Brian, you have introduced a new word to me today that I had not heard before. What is a snoot?
A snoot is somebody who really cares a lot about words and about language. The writer David Foster Wallace wrote an essay in Harper's Magazine some years ago in which he introduced the word. It's actually an acronym for syntax nudniks of our time. They're snoots. So snoots know the language. They care a lot about the language, very careful about words. Justice Scalia, I interviewed recently, and he is a big fan of this David Foster Wallace essay, and he is a self-proclaimed snoot. Actually, three of the justices on the Supreme Court today, Justice Ginsburg, Justice Souter, and Justice Scalia, are real snoots.
Souter the snoot.
That's right.
And you have a snoot quiz. Now, every time you come, you bring these quizzes, and the way we're going to do these, as always, is that Brian has these questions, and we will all sort of mentally imagine what they might be, and then at the end of the hour, we'll find out the answers. You're welcome to call in and ask questions. We're not asking you to call and answer these. We'll all get the answers at the end and just sort of test ourselves. But we're checking for snoot factor today. So how many questions do you have in this first quiz?
Well, we're going to do three sort of word issues, and then we have three and three, two different little kinds of quizzes. So the first one has to do with words. What is the past tense of forbid, and how do you pronounce it? So the verb to forbid, what's the past tense, and how do you pronounce it? There are two pronunciations of the past tense, I have to say. Snoots say it one way, non-snoots say it another way. So What is the traditionally preferred pronunciation? A second one is, what is the plural of money? Now, money itself can be a collective noun, but we also sometimes use the word monies. So how do you spell the word monies? That's something snoots always get it right, non-snoots always do it the other way.
Okay.
And then what is the preposition that should follow the word oblivious? If you say oblivious, you're oblivious. What is the preposition that should follow oblivious?
Well, see, now I think I know what I've probably always said, and then you've tipped me off to imagining that perhaps that's incorrect.
So those are the three sort of grammatically related word issues. The other part of the quiz for the first hour, what I call denizen labels. What do you call somebody who lives in this particular state. So what is the word for somebody who lives in Indiana? That's the first one. What is the word for somebody who lives in Rhode Island? And what is the word for somebody who lives in Wyoming? Or maybe I should... Actually, we got to throw Massachusetts in there as well. So we'll make it a fourth question. What is the word for someone who lives in Massachusetts? Some Texans, by the way, say Massachusetts. It should be Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's a tricky word, it seems, for many people. Okay. All right. Now, last time you came, I was sitting here very smugly and feeling like quite a snoot. And this time I'm not so sure. So we'll find out later how many of us are correct. Again, our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, ask a question of Brian, is 1-800-933-5372. But we will also remind you many times of the phone number, 1-800-456-5372. Become a member of the station. Join for the first time. Renew. We have some fabulous gifts. We have Brian Garner's books at the $120 membership level. You can go online and get this all squared away as you're listening. If you're sitting there at your desk at work, you don't even have to call anybody. It's really important that you support the station. So many of you have been incredibly supportive as we've taken over and the show has become Think. And many of you have emailed and shared kind thoughts and told us how much you like the show. We hope that you also remember that your feedback helps us do our jobs, and the ability to continue financially also helps us do our jobs. So that is what you do when you call 800-456-5372. All right. So, Brian, I'm curious to know what you do about expressions that are so commonly misused today that the correct expression actually sounds incorrect. For example, people will say, "Do you want some coffee?" And the way most people answer now is they say, "No, no, no, I'm good." And I know that that's wrong, but somehow it sounds odd to say anything else when the people around you say it incorrectly. How do you handle situations like that?
Well, the language changes. It changes year by year, decade by decade. It's easier to see it changing if you look at it in terms of decades. And we can actually, lexicographers do monitor how the language changes. "I'm good" is not an expression that I think I would use. But I also don't feel particularly strongly about an informal statement like that. I would not like it if somebody said, "I'm well," thinking that that's sort of an example of hypercorrection. But there are various expressions that that people use. For example, in Dallas, a lot of people, one of the vogue words is "unbelievable." They say unbelievable. I mean, and it gets very accented in a funny way that it wouldn't have been done 15 years ago. It's almost a vogue expression. And another one that I'm noticing a great deal, which is there are certain expressions that are almost exclusively used by one sex or the other. And a very popular expression among Dallas women is, "Oh, my gosh," or "Oh my God," but with an extremely exaggerated pronunciation.
You don't hear men saying that.
No, that's right. And it could, in fact, be bigger than just Dallas. But because what I focus on typically is the written word more and standard English, I'm not monitoring the newest fashionable words, except just to notice them. And ultimately, if something is mistaken, I don't want to be one of the final holdouts for what originated as a mistake. Let's take an example. Home in. To home in on a problem. That's what homing pigeons do, and that's the traditional expression, homing in. But a lot of people misheard it and started saying hone in, which does not make much literal sense, although if you sharpen a pencil, you're honing it, I suppose. We tend to say you're honing skills. But honing in, that is not the traditional expression at all. It originated as a mistake. Now, that one, snoots say home in, non-snoots say hone in, and you probably have 65-70% of the population saying hone in. But I think it's a very worthy minority who continues to hold on to home in. And ultimately, I'm not going to be one of the first 95% of the population to accept a change, but I don't want to be one of the last 2% holding out. So somewhere in that range of 95% to 97%, I will throw in the towel.
And how do you decide to make the call when multiple dictionaries, for example, argue over the pronunciation of something? I'm always curious about this. I had a far too extended argument with a friend recently about the pronunciation of what I would have said as proboscis and is actually listed in most dictionaries, proboscis. And there was this question of, I just assumed that the original Greek was the hard K, and I was accused of, I was really wounded by this, the etymological fallacy with regard to pronunciation. And I'm wondering where you decide if there are certain expressions in your multiple dictionaries where you have gone the different route and sat with the minority.
Well, yes. There are some lexicographers who believe that if enough of the population says it a given way, it must be duly recorded and that there's no ranking of the pronunciations. But what inevitably happens is you get literate folks saying it one way and less well-read folks saying it another way. And so that's why if you care about credibility in language, you really have to monitor usage. And I'll tell you, one of the very best authorities on pronunciation is Charles Harrington Elster of San Diego. He's just a wonderful pronunciation authority, and he has this book called The Big Book of Beastly Mispronunciation. So when I look at proboscis in his little dictionary, again, it's called The Big Book of Beastly Mispronunciations, and it is fascinating. He's got little essays on every word that has sort of disputed pronunciations. He says that W.C. Fields used to say proboscis with a K, but he recommends proboscis. The mispronunciation was a subtle part of his humor, according to Elster. But then again, it has become rather common, and today, most of the usage authorities, most of the pronunciation authorities continue to recommend proboscis.
Yes, I have already copped to losing that argument, but now I'll lose it in a very public way. But it's interesting to think about the process of how you go through that. We will start with some of the emails and the calls and questions. We do ask that if you're not already a current member of the station, before you call to ask a question, you call 1-800-456-5372. Get your membership squared away. Possibly pick up a copy of one of three of Brian Garner's books. Janice in Arlington writes, please address the I am done versus I have finished. Have the rules changed since I was in high school?
Well, anyone who told you that you couldn't say I'm done instead of I'm finished is simply spouting a linguistic superstition. Actually, it was a funny thing. My own daughter, Alexandra, when she was in first grade, we were having she's now in high school, but we had a little birthday party for her at a skating rink or somewhere. And I said, are you done, to one of the children who was eating birthday cake. And this little first grader corrected me. She said, no, steaks are done. You're finished. And she said, people are finished. Steaks are done. And I thought it was amazing to have a first grader correcting me, but charming too in its way. But there is no basis for thinking that to say I'm done, which is a little less formal. It is less formal, but there's nothing idiomatically wrong with that.
Were you tempted to pull the, do you know who I am, little girl?
No. You know, there was even when I was working on my usage book, I was trying to get a rental car one day, and I had just been working on the manuscript and said, can I get the upgrade at the Hertz rental counter? And the clerk corrected me and said, no, it should be May.
We will return in just a minute with Brian Garner. We need lots of you right now to call 1-800-456-5372. Become a member of the station. You can pick up a copy of one of Brian's books. We will return in just a minute.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Informal Courses for Adults, offering a chance to explore the world from the SMU campus. You can learn more online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest today for 2 hours, which is so exciting because we never get to have somebody for 2 whole hours, is lexicographer Brian Garner. Among his many books are 3 that we have to offer today at the $120 membership level. We have Garner's Modern American Usage, the Oxford Dictionary of American Usage and Style, and Black's Law Dictionary. The way to renew your membership or start your membership is to call 1-800-456-5372, donate $120 or more, and those thank you gifts are things you can choose, or at a different level, there are other gifts. You can also go online to the support page of KERA.org. It is important that we hear from all of you who love this show, who listen every day, for whom this is part of your midday ritual. Please call us. Thanks to people like Elaine in Fort Worth, Arthur in Dallas, Glenda in Arlington, and everyone else who has called. We need a total of 35 new or renewing members this hour. Be one of those people. Kick us off right. Remember that the sooner we finish our overall goal, the sooner we will end the membership drive. As much as we know, so many of you love having your programming enhanced by us giving the phone number. The sooner you call it, 800-456-5372, and become a member, the sooner we'll be finished. So thank you all who have already called or who are current. And if it's time for you to renew, please do so. Again, our guest is Brian Garner. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's talk first to Catherine in Plano. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. One, excuse me, I have a cold. And secondly, I'm not a real Texan, but I've almost been here for 20 years. And I never correct anyone, but I do a lot of tongue biting over Texas idioms. And I wanted to make a comment on the vernacular use of, oh, my God. It seemed to have an origin about 20, 25 years ago in San Fernando Valley, California, and was always referred to as valley speak. And young women, until they hit their 20s and have to get a job, have sustained it, unfortunately. My question is about the word important. I have heard it pronounced over and over again and by people in high places as important. It seems untidy to put that T in there, and I would really like Mr. Gardner to make some kind of statement so that people can hear the way it really is supposed to be pronounced and that people are judged by the way they mispronounce it.
You know what I love about your call, Catherine? I think so many of us have those that one word that just makes us crazy. and asking Brian to sort of intercede is something that I can completely relate to. So thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
I wonder whether she wasn't perhaps just listening a little too closely to the State of the Union address.
Not sure if that's where this comes from or not.
Well, it should be.
But the president is a Texan.
It should be important. And there's a definite T sound, but there's a sort of glottal stop, and it's so important. That's not good. I haven't really noticed that myself, and so I'll start listening for it.
I hear that a lot, actually.
Do you really?
Yeah, and I don't know where I didn't hear it before I came to Texas, but I think maybe it's beyond even this part of the country now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Snoots don't say it that way.
They do not.
Catherine's a snoot, though.
I'm sure she is. Yes, I think all the people who are calling today are bound to be snoots. We have a question from Vincent via email, emailing from Dallas. I think of the adjective problematic as expressing doubt and concern about something, especially related to time, something in the future and rarely used. In recent years, it has become very popular and overused, and he wants to know whether that's incorrect as a synonym for troublesome.
It's a usage that I don't consider particularly problematic. That is, the word has undergone this extension of meaning to being something like troublesome. I've not had any reason to think that that's a real problem.
All right. Well, are you ever sad when people come to you and they're certain that they're correct, and then you have to say, "Actually, I'm sorry,"
because I
would imagine
all the time.
Yeah,
people say, "Oh, I'm a snoot." Now, when I say snoot, we're not talking about snooty people. Nobody wants to be snooty. So you're not really. It's this word snoot that Wallace came up with and is increasingly being used. He actually capitalizes it all the way across. But a lot of people think they're snoots, but are not even close. They have no idea. So, for example, people will say, I'm a real snoot. I really get upset if anybody puts a preposition at the end of a sentence. Well, nobody who knows much about the language objects to that at all. It's perfectly proper in English. Or people say, I'm a real grammarian. I hate it when somebody begins with a conjunction, and or but, at the beginning of a sentence, when in fact, that's what good writers have always done. And so there are a lot of people who are sort of misinformed about language but care about it in a fairly misplaced way.
So rather than being the language police, they're sort of the language crossing guards who have received a whistle around their neck and want to blow it.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So, but how were all the nuns at Our Lady of Mercy Catholic Grammar School in Hicksville, New York, wrong? And how were, because I think a lot of people who think don't end a sentence with a preposition or don't start, with and or but, really know that someone told them that at some point and they learned it.
We have a great tradition of oral superstitions about the language, an oral tradition of misinformation about the language, and people pass on essentially shibboleths about how words should be used. And teachers do it. There's a lot of teachers who don't. A lot of teachers who are just wonderful about teaching how to handle the language well. But there are a fair number who do some harm and sort of keep their charges down by giving them misinformation about how to write well.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number we need you to call right now to support this station, to support this program, and possibly, if you're interested in joining at the $120 level or above, treat yourself to a copy of one of Brian Garner's books. We need to hear from you now, or you can go online to kera.org and hit the support page. Let's talk next on the phone to John in Garland. Hi, John.
I have a question about using me at the beginning of a sentence, such as me and Lucy are going to town. It's one of those things that just raises the hair on the back of your neck. When did that become acceptable?
I think it's never become acceptable.
Thank you.
But I have to say, John, you know, I grew up in West Texas. I grew up in a college town south of Amarillo. It's called Canyon. And my father constantly corrected my brothers and me when we would say things like, me and Brad are going to go play golf, or me and Blair are going to go to the store. If you grow up in Texas, it's actually in anywhere in the South or Southwest, it's hard to avoid that. But ultimately what happens is there are many instances of grammatical usages that we grow beyond. Once you become sort of in high school or college and you read more, you stop doing that. But it's good for parents to correct their children at a certain age. I might say don't correct your children much before second grade. There's one theory about the origin of stuttering, which is that hyperactive, sort of high-strung adults who are constantly correcting children who are just trying to achieve fluency can end up being stultified in their speech. And what you want first is fluency, and correctness will come later.
What about the expression when you call someone on the phone? Is it correct? You're actually supposed to say, it is I. Or is it okay to say, it's me?
I think it's quite all right to say, it's me. It answers very closely to the French, c'est moi. And it is true that, strictly speaking, it's what's called a predicate nominative to say. I would say this is he. I don't say this is him. Mm-hmm. But it's me is kind of an exception. It's an exceptional idiom. Almost all grammarians accept it.
We have an email question from Celine in Fort Worth. In a news story, I've heard someone say that something had been proved. I would say proven. I was taught that the past tense of reek is rot, but I don't hear anyone use it. Most important to me, she says, I was taught that we should always mention ourselves last. Sue John, and this is where we're close to what you just said. Sue John and I, or my colleagues and I. All over the place these days, I hear the opposite, such as I and my colleagues. And we can, I have these written if you want to hand this to you.
Well, proved, I've got them.
Okay.
Proved is the snoot's past tense of prove. Proven should be reserved for the adjective use. If you say a proven fact, that's correct. But That means you have proved the fact. So that's a little distinction that snoots follow. But proven is fairly common today as a past participle. Reek is an interesting one. The preferred inflection is reek, reeked, reeked. That's W-R-E-A-K-E.
Not the smelly kind of reek, but the havoc sort of reek.
Yeah.
Reeked, havoc.
Different from a well-wrought urn. And then it is true that it's considered as a matter of etiquette in English, more polite to put yourself, and a little more linguistically appropriate to put yourself last. So my friends and I, not I and my friends. Although just last week I was in Boston and a man who speaks Persian came up to me and said, why is this? He's a native speaker of Persian. Why do Americans always put themselves last? In Persian, you always have to say, I and my friends, or I and Amy are going to do something. And it's just a linguistic difference. But I'll tell you something else. If English were that way, we probably wouldn't have so many people saying I when it should be me. Give a book to John or I, which, you know, of course, it should be me. I think maybe if the pronoun came first, we wouldn't make the mistake with it.
We need to make sure that everyone remembers our other phone number, Brian, 1-800-456-5372. We need 35 callers this hour to keep the station strong, and we so far only have 10. And I'm not quite sure what the issue is here, but we definitely need to make sure that we're getting some people calling. We have all of our lines are full for people who want to ask questions and participate in the conversation. I'm going to assume, for the sake of this argument, that all these people are current members right now, and they have called this number because they've already got their memberships taken care of. But if you think that you're going to call today and you'd love to participate, we would love to have you. And Brian, not only is his mind full of information, but he is surrounded by books and will be able to answer anything you might want to know. But we ask that you first become a member. We've heard from so many of you who say, I listen every day, really like the new show, really like the direction it's going. We are incredibly grateful for your support and for your openness to the things that we're doing here on Think. But the program only exists because people just like you who listen every day come to think of themselves as public radio people. If you're one of these people, and I would argue that if you are a snoot and you are listening to this program, you are quite likely what I affectionately call a public radio nerd or an NPR junkie. You have maybe different ways of saying it. You should be a member of the station. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money. You call 1-800-456-5372 or you go online to kera.org. If you want to make it incredibly affordable, you can do the easy checks thing where it's just a little amount that gets debited automatically from your account every month. You stay current all the time and you're a member. You could also do this with your credit card. There's a bunch of ways to do it, but it's really important that you support this service. This is your station. And when we say that, we're thrilled that you've made the choice to listen. It's not always easy to get people to listen to your product. I've worked at all kinds of radio stations, and we're thrilled that we have succeeded to that end. But our success continues when you make the choice to be part of the station. We call you members and not just donors because you really are part of the formula that makes it possible. 1-800-456-5372 is the phone number. Become a member right now. Find out about thank you gifts and find out how great it is to really be a full-fledged member. If you call yourself a public radio person, you should be a member of the station. Wouldn't it be embarrassing if you said, oh, I'm such an NPR junkie. I love KERA. I'm such a KERA person. And someone said, oh, well, when is your membership up for renewal? And you had to say to them, oh, well, I'm not a member. Imagine what all your other public radio friends might think of you. And if they're the sort of people who would be proud and say, good for you for listening and not contributing, well, then you, I think, need some new friends. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You get to decide how much this membership will cost you. You get to decide how it fits into your budget. We try, to the extent that it's possible, to do everything in our power to make your options really wide and broad so that you can choose how your membership will be set up. And all you really have to do right now is make the decision to call 1-800-456-5372. Remember, and this is a pretty amazing deal, we have several of Brian Garner's books available as thank you gifts at the $120 membership level, which means that you can join on easy checks for $10 a month and choose one of these three terrific books. We have Black's Law Dictionary, we have Garner's Modern American Usage, and we have the Oxford Dictionary of American Usage and Style, any of which would be great arbiters if you have arguments with people. The Law Dictionary is probably something that you would want if you yourself work in the legal business, or maybe you know somebody who's studying law. I'm wondering, though, Brian, if you hear from people who are not in law but still feel like they need to have a copy of that just to sort of understand contracts and things that they're working on.
I think a lot of people have it for that purpose, yes.
And is there something that you know people look up? Is there sort of a first item that people go in there and look up that they tell you about?
No. There are a fair number of cranks around who are constantly looking up things in Black's Law Dictionary. I get a lot of silly mail about why do you define this word this way? And occasionally people think it's some sort of conspiracy to there's this view that there is a view that is not among lawyers. It's kind of a crank view that the Internal Revenue Code is unconstitutional and that all taxes are unconstitutional and that you have to go back to the original law of the 1770s, 1780s, and that anything that's happened since then is not legitimate. So when I cite more recent cases and discuss recent developments in law in Black's Law Dictionary, there are some people who think that all that stuff is illegitimate. I actually had a death threat from somebody who was claiming that the Black's Law Dictionary was propping up all the illegitimacies of law today. I probably shouldn't say that on the air, but it did happen.
I'm glad it didn't.
I may be the only lexicographer in history to have that kind of thing happen.
We have Brian Garner with us. Our telephone number to join the conversation, well, you already know that number. I'm only going to give the number that you need to become a new or renewing member right now. 1-800-456-5372, or you can go to the support page of KERA.org. Got to tell you, for all of you who have told us how much you love Think, how you listen every day, we're a little behind, frankly, on the volume of people we need to join right now. 25 people needed within about the next 20 minutes to keep us on our goal. We can easily do that. You just have to be one of them, so pick up the phone now and make the call, 1-800-456-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Informal Courses for Adults, offering a chance to explore the world from the SMU campus. You can learn more online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest today for the entire 2 hours of Think is Brian Garner. He is a lexicographer, has written multiple books, works with attorneys and judges to try and make sure that they are writing and speaking clearly. You have the opportunity to call him, ask him a question, send him an email. Today, the telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. But I would ask, as a favor, before you do that, please call our other telephone number, which is so important, 1-800-456-5372. We have a crack team of volunteers that can answer, make you a current member. You can choose your membership level, or you can go online and do it there. Become a sustaining member so that you have this small monthly amount drawn from your checking account, and it will go directly to our membership account. You never have to worry again about keeping everything current, and it stays going until you tell us to stop it. So it, again, leaves all the choices up to you. Please call right now, 1-800-456-5372. Let's talk next to a very patiently waiting Mark in Dallas. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Chris. I've been a member since Bob Ray was a baby.
I am so happy to hear that, and that's quite some time.
So my beef is with the expression carrot and stick. I understand this expression to mean something from quite a while ago where you would fix a stick to the horse, to the neck of a horse or a donkey, and at the end of it, tie a carrot on a string, and this would get the horse to move forward. It was a trick. It's come to mean something that is an enticement. But it's used now as offering someone a carrot or beating them with the stick. I heard you use it that way.
I was just,
I heard it on the Sunday morning news programs this weekend. Everybody seems to use it this way, and I'm curious as to how this happened.
Now, you're saying, if I understand, Mark, that the stick in carrot and stick was the stick that was used to dangle the carrot out in front of the donkey?
Yes.
Well, I have to say, according to the Merriam-Webster 11th Collegiate Dictionary, it first came into the language in 1876, and it's from the traditional alternatives of driving a donkey on either holding out a carrot or whipping it with a stick. So at least their etymology has to do with using the stick for whipping. And it does make sense that if you're going to have the order of carrot is the inducement, the stick is the punishment. I think that's probably a correct etymology, although I'll certainly look into it.
Okay, I understood it in a different way.
Well, I guess we'll hopefully, maybe next time we have Brian on, we will have it absolutely confirmed. But thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. 1-800-933-5372 is the telephone number to participate in the conversation or ask a question or make a comment. And, of course, the number to become a member of the station. Get yourself a copy of one of Brian Garner's books. And more importantly, I would say, make sure that you are a supporting member of the radio station that brings Brian to you, brings all kinds of great content to you here on Think, is 1-800-456-5372. Joy in Dallas writes, I hear even journalists say different than instead of different from, which I know to be correct, except possibly when it's followed by a clause. Please comment. And Joy, I have to thank you for saying even journalists, because I think journalists are perhaps the greatest violators of the rules of language. But what do you think? Different than, different from, Brian?
Snoots will tend to say different from and differently from. But she's got it exactly right. Sometimes if you say you have to say differently than, because differently from doesn't always work in the adverb. But good writers will always say different from.
800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Stephen in McKinney. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. Listen, I have a question about a frequent argument or competition between the words sympathy and empathy, and that's oftentimes with the dictionary open, so possibly you could clarify the true meaning of each for me. And I'd like to take that answer off the air, if that's okay.
Sure. Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you. I am a member, by the way.
I am so happy to hear that. Thank you very much. We sure appreciate your support. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number to become a member. Looking for information on the difference between sympathy and empathy.
Boy, that is a tough one. You know, even as he posed that question off the top of my head, it was it's hard just to call up the distinction. But my little entry in modern American usage says that empathy is the ability to imagine oneself in another person's position and to experience all the sensations connected with it. Sympathy is compassion or commiseration with another.
So, right. So sympathy is when you, and empathy, you don't necessarily have to feel sorry for someone as so much as you have to just understand what they're experiencing.
The ability to sort of be in the other person's shoes.
The world could use a little more of both, I think.
I think it'd be a good thing.
And we will get in just a minute to the, we want to make sure we have the resolution to the quiz. So we'll make sure that we have time for that. We do have a couple of lines open. Actually, we don't have lines open if you want to ask a question right this moment. But by the time you call and update your membership at 1-800-456-5372, I bet there will be space for you on the line to ask a question. We are looking for 20 more new or renewing members in this hour. Think about becoming a sustaining member, which means that we will put you on a plan where there's an automatic debit or a transfer from your checking account each month. It can be a really small amount. Does a great deal of good for us. Let's talk next to Chuck in Garland. Hi, Chuck.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, in more recent times, I've heard top officials and politicians using a phrase, at the end of the day, and that seems to grate on me. I don't know why I think it's so corny, but I'd much prefer to hear them say, but in the final analysis, I think we need to change strategy. But at the end of the day, it just seems cornball. What do you think?
It actually originated as a Britishism, the Brits were saying at the end of the day. It was a vogue word in Britain in the 70s and 80s. It came into American English. I mean, it's not to say that it wasn't used in American English before that, but it really took off in the 1990s and today. I actually have a friend who I think is actually listening to this program at this moment. I don't have the courage to tell him. But he can't get through.
You know who you are.
I think he knows. He can't get through 2 minutes of conversation without saying at the end of the day. And sometimes we'll talk for 30 minutes and he said it, 30, 40 times. And we all tend to get verbal tics. People pick up verbal tics. Adults tend to pick up different ones. But you know, I've said you know actually a couple of times in this program. You know is fairly ubiquitous. Like is one that, if we could stamp it out among teenagers, what a wonderful thing that would be. Because some children cannot say a simple sentence without throwing in like. And some of these verbal tics we ought to be aware of and try to root out to the extent possible. But he's right. At the end of the day, is a vogue expression. I tend to say ultimately.
Yeah, sort of falls into my speech. If I need just a moment to think, that's where it goes.
Well, we need to be a little bit forgiving with people in speech. But you can tell the difference between people who really care about how they sound and care about the language and those who don't. I have to say, though, being a snoot, Chris, is not a happy existence.
It's a lonely world, isn't it?
Well, I tell people I think the unexamined linguistic life has a lot to be said for it. I think people tend to be happier who don't care a lot about the language. I think they're ineffectual but happy.
Unfortunately, you can't go back, can you? You're stuck. You're stuck in snootdom forever.
I think that's right.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number, and we're asked to remind everyone what snoot stands for. What are the five words?
Syntax nudniks of our time. People who care about language. We don't have a very good word in the English language for this kind of thing. The Germans call it Sprachgefühl. That is,
they have so many words that
yeah,
we just...
I know. I know. Language feeling, they call it. But the Germans have contributed so many wonderful words to the English language, like Schadenfreude. And who else would come up with that word but the Germans?
Our German friends, yes, exactly. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. We have a special word for the people who call and make contributions, and we call you members. Those of you who already are members, you, as I like to say, have drunk the Kool-Aid. We appreciate that. I did not say drank the Kool-Aid. I'm sure that you approve of that. We appreciate your membership, your support. We need 17 of you to help us make our hourly goal. There are many ways that you can structure this. You can pay with your credit card and do it right away. Thanks to those of you who already have called this hour. We need 17 more of you out of 35. Betty in Fort Worth, thank you. Thanks to Rich in Aledo, Kim in Plano, Beth in Euless, Kathy and Dan in Wichita Falls, Rick and Letty in Colleyville. We have less than $190,000 to raise so that we will be able to end this drive outright, which is our goal as much as it's your goal. We can promise you that. The drive ends as soon as we reach that. $240,000 is the overall amount that we need. We are not trying to get rich here. We just want to have the resources that we need to continue bringing you the programming that you count on. So please think about that. Before you make your call to ask a question, think about calling 1-800-456-5372. In October, we reduced our normal fundraising time by almost a full day. You might think, well, 10 hours or whatever, but it really does make a difference. When you get to get right back to the regular programming, you're a big part of that. So consider that you have the power to help make it happen. Let's talk next to Joe.
I just assume not do something, or I just assume not do something. I wasn't sure what the correct usage was and where that came from.
I think it's just as soon, right?
Yes. I'd just as soon not do something. And it should be I'd just as soon. I would just as soon not do something. Or you can leave out the just and say I'd as soon. I would as soon not. Not do something, yeah.
That, you know, once you start to break it down, it sounds incredibly complicated.
But I've never heard somebody say I'd just assume not do something. I'm now going to have to research that. That would be see, I get excited when I find mistakes like this. When I hear mistakes, it used to bug me, but now it's very exciting to me because it means I get to write a little essay about it.
And there's a little essay, a new book down the road, perhaps?
That's right.
Let's get to the quiz because I want to make sure we hit that before the end of the hour. You have two different parts in this Snoot quiz, and I'm concerned. I should have spent the breaks looking all this information up so that I could answer correctly, but I'm willing to sacrifice my reputation.
Let me just remind people what it is, the past tense of forbid, the plural of money, and the preposition that follows oblivious.
Okay. Past tense of forbid, I'm going to spell it, and then maybe you'll tell me how to pronounce it. F-O-R-B-A-D-E?
That's right. But the pronunciation is the tricky part of this, because snoots say it one way, non-snoots say it another way.
I've always said forbade. Is that incorrect?
That's a spelling pronunciation. Oh. The preferred pronunciation is forbad.
Hmm. Okay.
And believe it or not, there's an alternative spelling without the E on the end, which would be better if we're trying to make it closer to the pronunciation. But forbid, forbade, okay. Forbidden. The plural of money?
Monies. M-O-N-I-E-S?
That's the non-snoot way of spelling it.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
I'm
0 for 2 here.
All the usage authorities recommend EYS as a regular plural, just like attorneys, EYS.
And so where does the other one come from?
Well, it's a curious little thing. It's why these little hyper-corrections come into the language, it's hard to know. A lot of people insist on saying an historical, when in fact all the usage authorities have, from Mark Twain forward, Twain felt very strongly about this, Fowler and other people who write about language, snoots always say ahistorical, non-snoots, thinking they're being right, use an historical, but monies is EYS.
And people who have money are described as moneyed, would it be the same M-O-N-E-Y-E-D?
E-Y-E-D, that's exactly right.
Okay. Oblivious? I'm oblivious to, I'm oblivious of.
It's one of those two.
Well, since I'm going to play the George Costanza this afternoon and say that everything I've always assumed must be incorrect, I guess is it oblivious of?
That's the snoot usage, oblivious of. And the history of the word is that it means forgetful. So it's something you once knew, but then you've forgotten that you're oblivious of it. And that's part of the etymology of it. So oblivion is kind of forgottenness. But people who use oblivious just to mean unaware tend to say oblivious too. And I think it's correct in the sense that you really can't criticize somebody who says oblivious too, except you just know, not a snoot.
They're just oblivious.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go with the state, what you call people from different states. And I would just, I suppose now I'll have to be safe and always say residents of Indiana, Rhode Island, Wyoming, and Massachusetts. But we have the list of what specifically you're supposed to call them.
Yeah, what do you call somebody from Indiana?
I would guess Hoosier, Indianite.
Your first one is correct. A Hoosier.
Is that right?
A Hoosier. That
okay.
Is exactly.
Well,
right.
There you go.
That's the preferred one, Hoosier. There are two other variants, Indianan and Indianian, but they're not considered the preferred form. It's Hoosier.
Okay.
What do you call somebody from Rhode Island?
Rhode Islander.
Exactly right.
Okay.
What do you call somebody from Wyoming?
Wyomingan?
Wyomingite.
Wyomingite. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that sound like something that you would have learned in geology? You know, I've got a sample of chert and a sample of Wyomingite.
It does sound a little bit like that, yeah.
Okay. And someone from Massachusetts, I would assume, probably incorrectly, is a Massachusettsian?
No.
Massachusettser?
By state law, there's a statute on this. They're known as Bay Staters.
Oh, come on.
Brian
Garner, those are trick questions. All right. Bay Staters.
And there is a variant, Massachusettsian. But boy, that's hard to say. Massachusettsian. I like Bay Stater. And that's what the Massachusetts statute specifies.
All right. Well, now we know, and we are well informed. We have another hour coming up with Brian Garner. That also means you have another hour to support Think by calling 1-800-456-5372. Become a member. Thanks to Julie in Dallas, Amy and Keith in Stephenville, Dennis in McKinney, Cynthia in Arlington, Jennifer in Dallas, Audrey in Watauga, and all the rest of you who have called. We need 12 of you to get up to speed for this hour. We're moving into the next hour. We will adjust the goals accordingly. We need to hear from you because you are a huge and important part of the formula that keeps this station strong.
Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro with production assistance from Maggie Conklin. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the completely redesigned 300-horsepower MDX. More information is available at Acura.com.